Welcome to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to our North Florida neighborhood.
It's Colby, and thanks for listening to North Florida Neighborhood. North Florida Neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and hearing what really sweet stuff they're doing with us and for us in our community. And today, the neighbor we get to chat with is Jen Patillon, so fun to say, the COE for the Family Support Services. Jen, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to chat this morning.
Well, Jen, give me a rundown first on who Family Support Services is.
Sure. Family Support Services plays a critical role in the community, and we serve as the lead agency for child welfare and related services for Duval and Nassau counties. So we have the distinct privilege of working with children and families typically when they are in their most vulnerable and life-altering challenges and helping them get to a good place. So we work with families who are in a challenging spot, and we go all the way through from supporting them while they have children in their home to foster care intervention if that is needed, and all the way through to either reunification or adoption.
And where are these families coming from, and why do they need this help?
You know, what we find is a lot of the families that we work with have just experienced some sort of a trauma themselves, and that has put them in a bad situation where they have ended up either abusing or neglecting the children that are in their care. Most of the time, we really find that it's much more focused on neglect, and a lot of it stems from community challenges like substance misuse, poverty, other things that are going on and that are impacting that family. A lot of the time, these are good people who love their children and want to do right by their children, but there are circumstances that have happened to them, sometimes a generation worth of circumstances. And if we can get in and provide some support, we can really help them and empower them to be in a good place to parent their children safely.
The phrase you just said, get in and help provide support, what's the response from these families when you do get in? Is it received well because you're looking out for the well-being of their children, or is it more so shunned and they play the defense role?
You know, I think it varies. You know, some people have a bad taste in their mouth for social services, and they think that, you know, that means that somebody's going to come in and judge them or make life difficult for them. And what I think sets us apart as a community is we have really tried to strengthen our family engagement skills and really show people that we are here to help them and support them and help them achieve their goals. Nobody wants to be in the situation of having child welfare involvement in their lives. Nobody wants to be in a situation where they can't take care of their children safely. And so if we're able to get through that initial fear, which is often what it is, and show them that we really can provide them some support and that we're championing them. We want them to be successful because we want them to be able to keep their own children safe.
And how are you able to enhance these skills and encourage them and help them out?
Well, I think it's important people know that FSS is one part of a system of care. So we really work with quite a few different partner organizations. We have case management partner organizations. We have therapeutic service providers, domestic violence partners, really a wide array of different partners that can assist with whatever that family's needs may be. Sometimes there really is a poverty challenge, and we can help that family get into some community resources and be able to be self-sufficient and successful on their own. Other times, there's deep challenges like substance abuse. We know that the opiate crisis has been a real factor in our community. We know that opioid fatalities have even been on the rise. And so those types of challenges take a lot deeper intervention and a lot more time to work through. And sometimes, despite our best efforts, we're not able to keep that child in the home while we provide those supports. Sometimes we do have to remove that child and place them temporarily in foster care.
Talking on foster care, that's one of the services you provide to the community. If we're interested in fostering, is that something we come to you for?
Absolutely. We have some tremendous foster parents, and it's great timing that we're chatting today because May is actually National Foster Care Month. And we really try to use this time not just to raise awareness about foster care right here in our own community and that need, but also to celebrate our foster parents. We have some tremendous people who really open their hearts and their homes to children in their most vulnerable state and really serve as a bridge between the formal system and everything that comes with us and that birth family. And a lot of times our foster parents end up being not just a support for the child that needs a temporary home, but they end up being a support for the parents as well and serving in somewhat of a mentoring role and championing them and encouraging them to keep going and work through whatever challenges they have to be able to parent their children again.
And since it is National Foster Care Awareness Month, how is Family Support Services bringing awareness to this?
Well, we're trying to take the opportunity to highlight some, which is a very small number because we actually have more than 400 licensed foster families in our community, which is amazing. So we've highlighted just a few of those through social media, and we've got a few fun surprises that we have planned for our foster parents to try to acknowledge them and honor the tireless work that they do. You know, everyone in child welfare, you know, is in this because they have a heart for kids and a heart for families. And I really feel like our foster parents sometimes are unsung heroes because they are really volunteers that are jumping in and meeting a critical need and doing it often without a lot of thanks. Mm. So we want to take the opportunity to thank them.
And for those of us that have that pull on our hearts or want to serve in some way, what are the characteristics of a really good foster parent? And like, how do we know if we fit those or even if we're ready?
Yeah, I think readiness is a huge part of it. Knowing that you are in the stage of life where you feel like the time is right to have something to contribute. It does not mean that you are a perfect parent. It does not even need to mean that you've had parenting experience. We really need a diverse array of foster homes to meet children from a diverse array of backgrounds and with unique needs and challenges. So there is no cookie cutter of what a foster family looks like. You can be single. You can be married. You can have kids. You can never have parented before. You really just have to have the space and the time and the readiness to be able to take on a young person who's been through some trauma. Mm. Right now, in particular, we have a real need for homes that will take in sibling groups as well as homes that are open to teenagers. And we provide some additional supports and services for those homes to make sure that they really feel equipped. Teenagers are a fun group, and people do not need to be afraid of taking in teens. They are going through their own life challenges, even outside of whatever trauma they've experienced, but they are a pretty unique and cool group. So we've actually added 21 teen foster homes to our community this year, and that is such an amazing thing that we're celebrating. But we still need some more.
I don't think any parent is ever ready to be a parent. You're just kind of thrown in the mix and you learn as you go. But what about these people who are, you know, taking on these teenagers or all of these siblings and all of a sudden they're like, I don't know what on earth I'm doing. Like, I need help. Do y'all also provide those services?
Absolutely. And you are so right. Parenting does not come with a manual, whether they are biologically yours or not. And as an adoptive parent of two kids from foster care, I do know that kids who've been through hard places and experienced trauma, you know, they do need some additional patience and compassion and understanding. And we definitely provide the training for that. You know, there are things that are universal in parenting, but there's also some things that people need to know and understand as they think about parenting a child who's been through trauma. And so we provide that training initially, and then especially for those who say that they do want to serve our teens, we have some really good additional trainings that we offer to those families that the foster parents have told us have really made an impact and have opened their eyes to maybe parenting differently than what instinct would have taught them, and that has really made a big difference. But, you know, the big thing is understanding the needs of the youth who are being fostered, protecting and nurturing them, and being that supportive role model to them and their birth families, supporting those family relationships that they already have, promoting lifetime relationships, because these youth will carry a piece of that experience with them throughout their lives. So they may only get to parent them for a short period of time, but the impact that they make is going to be lifelong. And lastly, just being a member of a professional team. You know, the child doesn't come in a silo, right? So our entire system kind of comes with that. And we really want to support foster parents as professionals and lean on their experience and expertise with the youth in helping us understand what that child may need.
And it's helpful knowing that, hey, when you take this next step, you're not going to go in blindsided and you're not going to go in by yourself expecting to figure it all out. But we have a team here that's on the same page and has the same goal as these foster parents.
Absolutely. You will not go it alone. We will be there with you.
So, Jen, you totally ran over this, but did you say you have adopted two kids or you're fostering two kids?
Yes, we have two of our five kids are actually adopted from Florida's foster care system.
All right, so what, from a personal perspective, what truth can you speak to people who are like teetering on whether or not they want to take that next step, or even people who are struggling with it?
Absolutely. You know, we have experience on both ends of the spectrum. So we have adopted a young child who was almost three when we finalized his adoption, and a teenager who was 16 when we finalized her adoption. And I think what has universally been true is that trauma is trauma, no matter how old the child is. And so even though, you know, I think a lot of people are under the impression that if I foster or I adopt a very young child, that'll be easier because they haven't experienced as much in life, but a teenager has experienced potentially a lot more. And that's true on some level, but truly early trauma impacts a child and impacts their brain development and their attachment. And so for them, it's just as important that we have families who are willing to be that consistent calm and that safe place for them as it is for our teenagers. And being able to just recognize that their what they've experienced has made an impact on them, but people can be a huge part of the healing process. You don't have to be a clinician. You don't have to be a therapist to be a healing person in that child's life.
So much truth just spoken and so many myths just debunked. But one thing I wonder, and I'd love for you to debunk this too, is how do your kids get along with the adopted kids? Like, is there any kind of hurt in between there, or any preconceived notions or reactions to it? Or is it a big happy family?
You know, I have always felt very fortunate that my kids have a really strong bond, and for them, blood is not the thing that connects them. I mean, they know that two of them are adopted and three of them were biological, and they don't think of it any differently. We celebrate our kids' adoption day as a second birthday because that's the day that they became ours. But we also acknowledge that there was another mommy that was there when they were born. And so I think having open conversations is really important. And one of the neat things that we do at FSS is, as part of our foster care training opportunity, we have information that we share so that potential foster parents can prepare their existing children for what that's going to look like and help them see themselves as having an active role in the fostering experience as well. So we really like to think of it as a family decision and a family commitment, and those sibling relationships, even if temporary, can be a really positive impact on that foster youth too.
That is so exciting to hear, and just so full of love. And another another thing is I have the privilege of chatting with Jen Petion, the COE for the Family Support Services. And Jen, can you just kind of explain what is the difference between fostering and adoption?
Sure. I think this is a common misconception, but they really are two very different paths. The same type of children, but a very different goal. So fostering is a temporary placement of a child where our goal is typically to reunify that child with their family of origin, whereas adoption is a permanent commitment to that child. Once that adoption finalizes, they are entitled to all the rights and responsibilities that a biological parent-child relationship would have created. So adoption is forever, and it's an amazing ending to what has been oftentimes a traumatic start. But foster care is temporary, and we really kind of view foster parents as professional parents and healing parents. And our goal is, if we can possibly make it safe for that child to return to their family, that's what we want to do. But understanding that we're not going to be able to do that 100% of the time. So a lot of times they end up walking with that child through the entire process of that family relationship coming to a close and now transitioning to adoption. But what we really like for people to know is you don't have to foster to be an adoptive parent. Hmm. We have a completely separate track for that. And a lot of people say, you know, I don't think that this is for me because I couldn't deal with the thought of that child leaving. And I totally respect that. It's not for everybody. You have to know what comes with that, and it's not always an easy thing, but it's a worthwhile thing. But if that's not for you, but you say, you know what, I would like to parent a child permanently, I would like to open my home to one of these youth that have that need forever, then we can put them down that adoption path. And absolutely, that's also a need that we have.
And at what point does fostering turn into adoption? Like, say I'm fostering two kids and their family just isn't going on the right path, or it's not going to work out and they will be put into adoption. But what if I want them full time?
So that's always something that we consider. One of the things that we pride ourselves on at FSS is supporting that family relationship from the very beginning. So what we didn't talk about yet is that our first goal, if we do have to remove a child from their home, is to place them with family members. If we can find relatives who are willing and appropriate to care for that child, we place them with relatives first because they know that child and it's a familiar setting for them. If we can't find anybody, then we go with the traditional sense of foster care, which is those that don't have an established relationship with that child. Sometimes, though, there's kind of an in-between phase where there's not a family member locally immediately, but we may be able to place them with a family member that's out of state. So sometimes that process can take some time while that case is progressing. But once we've explored all of the family members and that judge has made the decision that that child cannot go back home, at that point, absolutely, we would be having that conversation with a foster parent of whether or not they felt like they could and would want to be the permanent parent for that child. We have both. We do have foster parents who end up adopting the children in their care, and we have foster parents who say, no, I believe my role is to be a temporary parent, and I'm going to love this child until you find their permanent home. And that's great, too.
And when you say be a temporary parent, how long or short term is that? Is it like a month, 3 years?
Well, every case is different and every case scenario comes with different challenges. But typically we say it would be a few months. Usually when a child is removed, we try to get that child back to their family of origin within 9 months to a year. Sometimes, though, like I said, we're able to locate a relative in the beginning of that process. And so sometimes we only need a foster home for a short period of time. There really is no set amount of time, but typically it should be less than a year.
And I just have so many questions because this is so interesting and just like the process through it. Am I allowed to pick what kids I want to foster? Like I only want to foster boys.
It can be. We definitely want to know what each of our foster families feel equipped to meet the needs of when it comes to various characteristics of youth. So, you know, housing is part of that. So if you have two rooms available, maybe you can take both genders of children. But if you already have kids in your home and foster children will be sharing a room with your natural born children, then that may change what gender you can take and what your home is equipped and available for. The same thing with age ranges. You know, we like to know what people feel comfortable with and what their preference is. Some people, because they work outside the home, they need to focus on kids who are more school aged because that helps with the childcare needs of that youth. But other people feel like, you know what, I do have more flexibility. I can take younger kids, or I've raised teenagers before and I love teens, so let me take those youth. We like to know what people feel that they can really effectively meet and parent.
Jen, if we've just been really moved and touched and want to take the next step, what does that look like to take the next step as a foster parent or even the next step in the adoption realm?
Sure. The best thing to do, I always tell people, educate yourself first, get all the information and really think it through as a family. And you can find a lot of information on our website, which is fssjax.org, fssjax.org. That's a great place to start. You can even submit your contact information through that website, and we will have one of our recruitment team give you a call, talk you through the process, answer any questions you may have. I think a lot of people probably have additional questions that pop up as they think about these things. So we want to answer everyone's questions, and we want to make sure that you feel like this is right for you at this time. And that we can really explain what that process is going to look like. I'm actually really excited because we are about to launch a new technology partner platform called Binti that will allow us to take our entire foster care application process and make it digital to where you can complete the entire application on your smartphone, tablet, or computer. And it is going to make the process of getting through the licensing that much faster and more efficient. So it is a great time, if you've ever considered it, to go ahead and take that next step.
And then, Jen, what about those of us who we are not in a position to take on anybody, but yet we still feel moved and we still want to somehow serve? What options are available?
Sure. We have several times a year where we need some concrete support for our foster youth. So things like our annual back-to-school drive or our Christmas donation drive. We also like to do diaper drives and things like that. I think one great way to support kids in foster care and foster parents is to really wrap arms around those families. So we have certain groups and different organizations. We have several church partners that really try to wrap arms around foster families and bring them a meal, you know, once a week, once a month. Mow their lawn, offer to come watch the children so that mom or dad can go to the grocery store without several little people trailing behind. Things like that really make a huge impact and help those who do feel like they are able to foster, called to foster, like it's a manageable thing because they've got support.
Well, so many opportunities and in ways we can come along and support you. And Jen, thank you so much for all you do in our community, and thank you for being such a sweet neighbor.
Well, we so appreciate you shining a light on this and acknowledging and honoring our foster parents this month. It means a lot.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood. Listen again next week. And if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, @jacksonville.radio.